that it's our individual responsibility to try to create the dream jobs that we want for ourselves. And I believe that it's possible to do so regardless of whether or not you work for a corporation or whether or not you work as an entrepreneur.
Welcome to another edition of the Columbia University Sports Podcast, The Cusp Show. We talk about the business of sports, media, disruption, global growth, all different kinds of stuff. I'm Joe Favorito here at the beginning of May 2024 with my co-host Tom Richardson as a different but unique semester on the Upper West Side of Manhattan comes to an end, Tom.
Yeah. It's been a difficult couple of weeks for everybody, and we're leading up to graduation, what, in a week, 2 weeks, week and a half. Mm-hmm. I guess it's May 15th. Mm-hmm. I'm glad things have seemed, at least for now, have settled down. But for those of us that are working and teaching, you know, we just have to keep plugging along with everything going on in the industry. When you did the opening, Joan, we talk about disruption and media and everything else. I thought you were going to say we also like to talk about basketball because there's basketball fever in our town right now, and it's well deserved. For those of us who are Knicks fans, we couldn't be any more thrilled. We're doing this taping the day after they beat Philly in the first round series, which was one of the best series. Joe, I saw a stat on Front Office Sports. I don't know if you saw this, that the total number of points, the point differential over the six games was
1 point.
1 point, which is kind of an amazing stat. Yeah. And I thought it was some of the most entertaining basketball I've watched in a long time. And I know a lot of friends and acquaintances who felt the same way. So there's going to be really good momentum going into the series with Indiana. I really love it for New York City because the Garden will be rocking. And we've got the Rangers in the playoffs going to the next round. I think that starts, I believe, this weekend. Knicks will be Monday. So it's really exciting in the New York sports scene for a change.
And I can't really put into perspective what 1994 was like because people don't even... I would say most people, Tom, that you and I deal with, at least definitely from an education standpoint, weren't even on the planet in 1994.
No, I was going to say that. Weren't born yet. You're talking about the Rangers winning the Cup?
Well, Rangers winning the Cup, Knicks losing in the final with John Starks going 1-for-19, and OJ.
Oh, that's right. That was
all the same. And it hasn't, and nothing's happened
late
since
spring, then. Early summer kind of experience for everybody. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
And there's been nothing since then. Nothing. I mean, there has not been a championship.
No, I mean, there have been some moments and some fun, but nothing like this. And I think we talked about this on the pod when Mike co-hosted with me and we had Layden. We actually did a little basketball chit-chat. Mm-hmm. And I think I made the comment, Mike may recall, that I thought Jalen Brunson would will the Knicks' way to victory. And what we have just witnessed will go down in Knicks' history. And if he continues this into round two, maybe round three, maybe finals. Like, he's the real deal, though. Love watching that guy play. Love the grit. Love the heart. Love the
Iverson-like with a little bit more height, actually. So,
yeah, and he's just a very smart. I mean, the thing about the Knicks. Sorry to our guest for Ram. Although she's a former pro basketball player.
We're going to segue into basketball.
Bring
her
into this conversation.
I love it. I love it.
But yeah, Sandrine, we're sorry about hogging this conversation with an actual former pro basketball player. So, Joe, why don't you introduce Sandrine and maybe we can get her perspective on the NBA playoffs.
Yeah. Well, and I have to just give a little bit of a ding because our producer, Mike Schroeder, Tom, nobody outside of you and I or a few people will care about this, but apparently there was a little bit of overhype on the Columbia intramural basketball scene. And people thought that the Columbia, our program, which has done traditionally very well in intramurals, was just going to roll through. But apparently, Mike Schroeder, our producer, had a Giannis Antetokounmpo moment where he was unavailable to play. Oh. And they went out in like the quarterfinals. And it was like players who played like Division I basketball, you know, and just an incredibly disappointing finish. I say that not really seriously, but we were certainly expecting a little bit more, but it's good that the Knicks can just raise all the spirits of people around basketball. So it might say we tried.
And by the way, from a business standpoint, I'll just add one more thing before we get to the introduction. The fact that we lost Giannis, Dame, Steph and LeBron and AD in the last week is not good for the NBA. I don't know if you saw the first weekend was down 9%. And it's ironic because now all the stories are out about their new media deal, which allegedly is going to be at least 2x. This is something else we talked about with Mike and I talked about with Layden. But on the one hand, it's so hot on the television front because of this new media deal that's probably going to be announced in the next couple of months. But on the other, it's just this thorny, complicated issue of maintaining ratings when you're really a star-driven business. So it's going to be really interesting look going into the second round.
Yep, for sure. Anyway, all right, let's talk hoops, entrepreneurship, a little bit
Career
of
design,
disruption,
career design.
career design. So
Yeah.
we have a great guest today who can talk directly to playing high-level hoops at places like UNLV and elsewhere, but has really in a subject, Tom, that we've never really covered before, which is kind of like the growth of sports on the African continent from a business perspective. And Sandrine Nzuku is the founder and CEO of Playbook. And we met, I think, I'm not sure if it was 2 or 3 years ago at an SBJ event. And we've kind of stayed in touch and friends. And I followed anxiously awaiting how her business was going to play out from a financial standpoint. And, I think the African continent people look at is still kind of like this far off place, which is yet to be developed from a sports perspective. But there's lots going on, and she's really at the heart of a lot of those things and trying to figure out how that translates, literally translates to Europe and Asia and North America from a business perspective and a business development perspective. So, Sandrine, it's great to have you on the Cusp Show.
Thank you so much. We've been talking about this, you're right, for the past 3 years at least.
I think it's
So
three.
it's exciting. Yeah, pretty sure it's three. So, and a lot has happened in the development of sports in general. Honestly, I think in a lot of emerging economies, but specifically on the African continent as well. So happy to dive in.
Well, I think Joe Sundrine teased your background enough where everybody's thinking, what's her story? Like, how did this all play out? Like, how did you get here? So it's an amazing story. Looking through your LinkedIn profiles is kind of mind-boggling, but it would be best if you could start with that story, the journey to the point you're at in your career right now.
Sure. I actually, everything really started for me with basketball, and my father was the captain of the national men's basketball team in Cameroon. And so he believed in sports and the power in its development for youth. And so he put us kids, myself and my siblings, in all different types of sports. And when I was about, I want to say I was 11 at the time, I was quite literally forced. He forced me to play AAU because I'm sure you can't tell now, but I'm 6'1". And I, at the time, I believe I must have been 5'10". So I think he read the tea leaves a little bit and saw that there could be potential in basketball. And so I started playing AAU, and over the years started recognizing I didn't like it at all at first, but I found some friends and started realizing that, hey, this could be something, quite honestly, that can pay for my school and really lead me down some interesting paths. And so I decided to go to first University of Texas at Arlington, but then transferred after a year to UNLV and had such a fun career. And was really able to grow. And to be honest, I really lucked out even being at UNLV because it's such a cool basketball school in particular. Since every summer we have summer league that happens within our gyms. We have, USA basketball on the men's and women's side that train there every summer. And so it was just an incredible opportunity to really see basketball and really see superstars up close. So I decided to play overseas, and played in Spain as well as in Lithuania before I came home because my very Cameroonian mother told me that basketball is not a real job. And so I decided ultimately to come back and started a career in finance, which again was something that I did not anticipate doing. But I was in a very particular part of finance where really institutional finance that's focused on retirement funds, in retirement planning. And after having spent about almost 4 years there, I wanted to get back into the Africa space, wanted to also consider getting back into basketball, and found myself at the 2017 NBA Africa versus World Game. And helped to coach, got a really incredible opportunity to coach at the Basketball Without Borders camp, and went to a conference while I was there as well, and ended up meeting the chairman of Invest Africa US, which was a new organization at the time, really focused on helping to support the community of US-based, well, really North American-based investors as they look to invest in Africa. And so that included everyone from private equity firms, venture capital firms, ultra high net worth individuals, institutional investors. And he was looking at the time for someone to really help to build that business and manage that community. And in a really kind of serendipitous way, Amadou Fall, who's now the president of the Basketball Africa League, which is, of course, the NBA's first real commitment to Africa. He was a CEO of NBA Africa at the time, and he was one of the founding board members. And so, in a really cool way, I was able to really watch, starting in 2017, really watch the development of the Basketball Africa League, really, contribute to that. And that, ultimately really led me here. I left Invest Africa in 2021. And took some time off, went to the first BAL finals when it was COVID and it was the bubble. And I saw the product and it was amazing. It was fun. It was exciting. But the reality is that we don't have the ecosystem to be able to really support, or at the time, we didn't have the ecosystem to be able to support a product like that. We need private sector leaders to understand how to participate. We need investors. We need vendors. There's so many things. And so I thought to myself, there's a really cool opportunity here to contribute to the development of the business of sports in general. And ultimately started, an advisory firm, and that really spun into the work that I'm doing now, which is building a startup that is a media company as well as an advisory firm that helps to support the development, the sustainable development of sports across not only Africa, but also the Middle East. Because the hope is that we really end up being a platform for emerging sports economies. Because I think there's a lot to learn cross-regionally and a lot to invest in cross-regionally as well. So that is a little bit about the Playbook
Wow.
Universe and how I got
Can you just let
here.
us all know about the status of the BAL? Like what in terms of size and scope and kind of the impact so far?
Yes. Yeah. So now it's been in full operation for a little bit over 3 years. They now are in five different cities. And so, it's Cairo, it's Dakar, Kigali is where the finals are. They just had at least the opening of this BAL season in specifically Pretoria is where the games were, but Johannesburg, which is a really nice return of NBA Africa having events in South Africa. And so it's really exciting to watch it grow. And so we'll see. We'll see. I think that a lot of people forget that the Basketball Africa League is a startup. And oftentimes, there's at least foreign investors in the African continent can be quite impatient when it comes to their capital. And so I, over the course of the past several months in particular, there's been conversation about the financial stability of BAL, what that looks like. And it's not that it's necessarily invalid, but also African markets are tremendously complex. It's also a business that's in, five different markets at the same time. And they're also, and these are five different countries with different regulatory, processes. And it's tremendously difficult. And so, there's been some interesting partnerships that they have looked to establish to do things a little bit differently. I think namely this year, they've partnered with a music festival called Afrofuture. And so they're looking to bring in more of an entertainment angle into it. They've also recently partnered, literally just today, I believe the news broke today, of partnering with a Ghanaian designer in order to build out their merchandising arm. And so they're really pulling into kind of the creative entertainment space to really help to lend support to the overall growth of the game, because it's true that, basketball is not certainly far from the most popular sport across the continent, but they're looking to grow it.
So, talk a little bit about, you mentioned the five markets, which I think especially when, the ugly Americans look at this and they say, oh, we're going to grow in Africa. It's like when people said, oh, we're going to get involved in esports, or, without understanding the complexities, or when you talk about not a country, but an entire continent, how difficult is the education process? And the other piece of that, which would be interesting, is there was obviously a World Cup. The learnings that came out of the World Cup, did any of them stick, and are any of them still kind of moving along now from a business perspective, across the entire continent, but especially in particular countries?
Yeah, I think that yes and no. I think the biggest, in my viewpoint, the biggest lesson to have been learned from the World Cup was the infrastructure, which is the biggest opportunity, but also something that I think is not understood well enough. And so you see African countries, we even just saw it with AFCON, we're seeing it now even in Nairobi and Kenya, who will host AFCON in 2027, who just announced the creation of a stadium. And they're doing a public-private partnership. And don't yet even know how much it costs, but they started breaking ground on it. And so, large, massive pieces of infrastructure that cost hundreds of millions of dollars to invest that for its use to only for the life of that, at least the, just the occupancy of it to be so minimal for these massive, large events just simply does not make business sense. But it looks good. Right? Like if you have this nice, fancy new stadium. And this is where I really think that there's an incredible opportunity to learn from other regions. I think there's the stadium from the last World Cup, of course, that was held in Qatar. The stadium 974 or 973, I can't remember, but the idea of that stadium was that it was built out of containers and that you can completely break it down and rebuild it somewhere else. And so, in my viewpoint, why wouldn't AFCON really look to encourage something like that, because there are a lot of conversations from citizens who say, why is the government investing $150 million into a stadium when, there's other infrastructural problems that can be contributed to, and those people are valid. And so in that sense, I think that there hasn't been enough of an application of those types of learnings. But on the flip side, I think that governments in particular are starting to really understand, and private sector leaders as well, are starting to understand the value even of just large sporting events. I think we're seeing much more larger attractions, whether or not that be the Basketball Africa League. Of course, there's conversation of Formula One happening in Africa in the next few years as well. You also have NFL now poking around and at least specifically on the women's side of the Women's World Cup, there's been African countries that have certainly had an interest in hosting the Women's World Cup as well. So there's a lot to be, there's so much to be gained. And so I do think that there's progress. But also, I don't know. It feels a little bit like it's two steps forward and a little bit two steps back. Maybe one and a half steps back.
Sandrine, when you mentioned the different facets of the business of sports in Africa that need additional support, investing, facilities, merchandising, etc. It's interesting that it appears that you picked media and kind of business media as the area you want to focus on with Playbook. I was intrigued by the description of Playbook, a sports business media platform featuring industry news, original content, and live events on the sports industries of Africa and the Middle East. So what does that look like when it's manifested? Like, how do you build a business like that in a very disrupted media world that we live in?
Yeah, I think by through community, and what I'm really fortunate about, I think community is true of just anyone across the globe, but specifically African people are so community driven. And so it really looks like having some meaningful and important discussions and conversations on our platform. I've been sharing content really first and foremost to test it, to see if people even wanted this content in the first place through my own LinkedIn. And there's been, I've now have had over the past 5 months just like a few million impressions. And it's been really interesting to see some of the conversations that have taken place from that. And we need to bring those conversations in real life as well. So it also doesn't just look like a website where we're able to aggregate stories and also, share and highlight people within these communities who are doing the work, but also bringing people together in the form of conferences, in the form of events, and meaningful conversations. That community building aspect is effectively really what I did at Invest Africa US amongst the North American investment community. So, and I understood how powerful it was in actually driving capital, because that's really what this is for. It's not just to tell a story and to, have these beautifully, provided graphics and videos out there. It's ultimately to have a conversation so that actions can be taken and money can be exchanged, because we cannot build the continent without the funding necessary. And so how can we really encourage and provide the information, just and even just the awareness about what's happening, so that people can be encouraged not only to invest, but also to bring larger scale events, just like UFC. UFC is another large
Right.
player that's considering hosting an event on the continent as well. So we're seeing it. And of course, PFL, oh gosh, PFL is really committed, obviously, through what it is that they're doing with the launch of PFL Africa next year, which is exciting to see, because you need innovative and exciting players like that who are willing to take the risk and the leap. So we're seeing it. It's moving little by little.
Is there a media company or a media business in the US or Europe or anywhere else that is a model for you, an inspiration for you in the way you build Playbook?
So specifically in terms of who covers Africa, there's a company called Afro Ballers who I've been really fortunate to help to support since its inception. They are predominantly focused on covering what happens on the court, although they do cover additional stories as well. But they've grown really significantly, and the founder Kevin has been doing a lot of work, not only in sharing the stories, but also kind of getting his hands dirty in terms of understanding that it's not enough at this stage to just be a media company. You have to also be an advisory company at the same time, because there's just information that he's privy to that he can help to support, really move initiatives with. And so that's what a lot of what he's been doing. But on the US side, there's so many. I think Sportico is amazing. I think that Front Office Sports, the way that it's grown, has been very cool. And also outside of the sports realm, a company that I really admire and have been looking at is Skift for the travel industry. And I'm not sure if you guys are familiar
That's
with it.
Rafat Ali,
Yes.
correct? Yeah.
Yes. But I've read a lot, researched a lot about the way that he built out Skift. And that is essentially what we want to be able to build, because we want the platform to be global. But also, we want it to be meaningful and to for it to provide information for industry leaders.
Joe, you may remember that name, Rafet. He was the guy that started paidcontent.org in
Oh, yeah.
early web. Like that was a big thing for anybody working in the digital business. Like everybody read that for a bunch of years. And he eventually, I think, I don't know how long ago, but a while back, he founded Skift, which from what I understand has done well.
Oh, yeah.
Sandrine, talk about the novice coming into the African market, and I know you've talked to a lot of big investors trying to figure it out. How do you break down the understanding of, well, you're not really coming into Africa, you have to focus on Kenya or Nigeria or South Africa or Morocco to start? How do you kind of explain the nuances, but also the opportunities country by country?
Oh man, it's so complex, and it's so particular also to each investor. It also is particular to each discipline. So you have different markets that also are, you have different disciplines that are more popular. So for example, in a place like Kenya, for example, perhaps basketball isn't there yet in terms of its popularity, but golf is huge. And you have
Wow.
a
Oh, interesting.
PGA women's tour. Everyone plays golf there, which is super interesting.
I have no
And you
idea.
also have,
Yeah, I have
yeah,
no idea. Anyway.
yeah. It's really interesting. And some of those leisure sports, a lot of people are not, and even, and by people, I mean just people at large, but also specifically, just the, whether it be the ministers of sport, whether it be, private sectors, don't understand, or ministers of tourism as well, don't understand the value that is in sports in particular, and specifically these leisure sports. Even when you talk about paddle, when you talk about tennis, when you talk about golf, there's such incredible destinations across the African continent that would really benefit from marketing themselves as golf destinations, as to host an open, for example. I just think it would be incredible. So it really depends. And it's so specific. I don't have a better answer for you than that. But
That's good.
there's it's really a matchmaking game between who the person is, what they're particularly interested in, what disciplines, how much money they have, et cetera, versus that will really tailor which markets that they look to enter into and that
Okay.
may be appropriate.
So
Curious
flip
about
it the
the.
other way. We just
Go
I
ahead,
want
Joe.
to just get the other side. Flip it the other side. Tell us about the opportunities that are growing and existing in countries that people should know about, whether that's with a brand or whether that's with a sport or a particular event. So if you were going to someone who had money and wanted to invest, you'd say, here are the places, the events, and the brands that you should be paying attention to. What are some of those examples?
I would say in the sports tech world, there's a company called Sportable that is based out of Cape Town. And Cape Town really is the hub for VC, and it's a tech hub as well. But Sportable in particular is a really interesting company that's building tech that essentially you can attach it to athletes that are playing in game, you can attach it to balls, but it helps to essentially measure the game in real time, and provide a number of measurements, how quickly the ball is spinning, how fast it's moving, how fast a particular player can be moving, et cetera. And they've been doing very well. They're actually the first African sports tech firm that raised $15 million within their first, or at least within their Series A. And so they're really exciting to see and to watch the growth of in the sports tech space. I think that esports and gaming in general is also a very interesting space, particularly in mobile games, because that's an area where Africa can actually is a le leapfrog in comparison to other markets, because everyone has a phone. Everyone is very familiar and used to using mobile. And so you see a lot of mobile game playing. And even from a sheer numbers perspective, one in four people in the world by 2050 is going to be on the African continent. And so when you're talking about barriers to entry in terms of even playing, esports in particular and gaming in general is going to be the biggest opportunity, because it's easy. You pick up your phone and you can play, versus if you want to play basketball, finding basketball courts is few and far between, unfortunately. And so that's an incredible and really huge opportunity in that respect. And all over, Egypt is really booming. Kenya, Nairobi specifically, Lagos is really interesting in terms of esports, and then of course Cape Town as well. So there's just a lot of areas. I think as well, people who are interested in sports betting. I mean, sports betting has made quite a lot of millionaires in the past few years as well. And it's just been booming, and it's no different than any other region in the world, in that Nairobi, and there's some regions that are still figuring out the regulatory frameworks, but some, the largest cities have very, very significant sports betting companies. And so same thing, Nairobi, Lagos, Johannesburg, Cairo. So It's been cool. It's been cool. It's been really interesting. But I would also say, in general, sports infrastructure, it is what we cannot build the industry without sports infrastructure. And so there's a number of opportunities across the continent, I would say, and a number of companies, one company in particular called Zarya Group, that is co-owned by Masai Ujiri, who's the president of the Toronto Raptors. And he's doing a lot in terms of looking to develop specifically arenas, which at this stage, we had the stadium conversation, but in lieu of stadiums, we still need world-class facilities, but it really is in the form of arenas that it really makes sense.
You know, it's interesting listening to you talk about all the disparities in popularity of certain sports platforms, languages, etc. For your new business, for Playbook, you've got to take all that into account, I suppose, and kind of go across the spectrum in terms of, like, for example, like, is there a lot of disparity in social media usage from country to country? Is there a lot of huge disparities, let's say, in broadband access, things like that? I'm just curious if you're factoring, I guess you have to factor all that in to the way you're going to build Playbook in terms of its actual execution.
Absolutely. And I cover stories really across the African continent, but you're exactly right. The price of internet, specifically across continent, varies significantly. And oftentimes, it's much more expensive than you would even find in Western countries. Whereas, of course, income levels are very much, much smaller. And so, I'll even give you an example because I was in Cameroon in December. And while I was there, I was expending approximately $5 per day on Wi-Fi. And it was enough Wi-Fi for me to make sure that I could take Zoom calls, I could have a full day of work, but also be able to watch YouTube videos or watch a Netflix show after. But when you think about it, $5 a day, times 30, that's $150 just on your internet bill. And for a country like Cameroon, where the average income is $200, you just cannot afford it. And so, something that is really important to me is the way in which the information is delivered. So I can't just rely on video, like how many readers rely on, or at least how many readers really engage with media platforms in the West. It's really engaging, but ultimately, if all my content is video content, there's a large swath of people that I'm going to be missing out on. Across the continent. So it's tricky.
Do we want to talk a little bit about the career design stuff?
Yeah, let's do it.
That would be fun. Sandrine, you have a very unique LinkedIn profile. I compliment you on its on the way you did it. And you mentioned four areas of focus that are really important to you. Sports, in order, sports, career design, fashion, and entrepreneurship. Let's talk first about career design, because as we mentioned to you getting ready for the recording, we love to get into some career stuff, particularly as it relates to advice for young people. And it sounds like you have a passion for that as well. Can you share some of your wisdom on that subject?
Sure, I absolutely can. I believe that it's our individual responsibility to try to create the dream jobs that we want for ourselves. And I believe that it's possible to do so regardless of whether or not you work for a corporation or whether or not you work as an entrepreneur. And it requires a little bit of creativity, but ultimately, I do believe that your natural inherent, everyone has certain gifts, certain interests. And I believe that it's important to not only identify them, but try to incorporate them as you can where you see it's appropriate within your career, because it makes you work harder, and because it feels easier, and ultimately your trajectory goes up much faster and higher when you're genuinely interested in your work. And I understand that not everybody has that luxury, but I do believe that there's a lot of value in thinking creatively. And we live in an age now with social media, where we can truly create different opportunities for ourselves that are completely, we don't have to ask for anyone's permission to talk about something that we want to talk about. And that's, to be honest, in terms of advice or guidance that I would have for anyone, I cannot express enough how valuable specifically the LinkedIn platform has been for me and the idea of social media. It is on LinkedIn in particular, there's only 1% of the entire, at least user base of LinkedIn that creates content. And so
Wow.
people didn't see it as content creation, understandably, because LinkedIn is a place where, you announce your new job and you look for another one. But ultimately, it's so few and far between, and it's different. It's vastly different than other media platforms. And so, in a number of ways, there's less bots. And so even the your audience that you are able to grow within LinkedIn is more valuable because there's just higher engagement. And so there's a really incredible opportunity, I think, that exists right now to create content on LinkedIn on whatever it is that you are offering, especially if you're offering a B2B service or you're offering something that would be useful to people who, are in business or in or work at a desk job. It is tremendously, tremendously valuable, and also doesn't require much. People, you can choose your consistency, but honestly, posting once a week is even enough, can make quite a difference to your visibility. And it also is strategic in terms of your career, in that it changes the dynamic of what job searching is like. When you're job searching, you're obviously going out to look for particular jobs, but what's much more effective is if you reverse that and you have people coming to you. And so you want to create that alignment by being able to talk about what it is that you want to talk about. And naturally, those people will come. And this is not just true of LinkedIn, this is also true of TikTok and Instagram. I don't know, I'm a little bit nervous about TikTok. TikTok's a different animal, but I'll enter into that space surely soon. But this is a very cool time to create your career in a way that we've never had before.
Yeah, so at the beginning of your answer, it sounded as though you were suggesting that people play to their strengths, look for aptitudes, God-given aptitudes that you're ostensibly born with, and just kind of capitalize on that and not fight. Because that's a really interesting thing where you see like an aptitude testing, like Johnson O'Connor research. I don't know if you know about that, but it's an aptitude testing service that's been around for over 100 years for people that are trying to figure out what to do or are lost in a career at age 30 or whatever. And the whole focus is on discovering your natural aptitudes that are not going to change whether you're 20, 40, or 60, but rather understand them and then map them against the job market. What kinds of positions would be good for someone like you or me, which might be very different. And there's no hard and fast way to do that easily, but at least makes you think about that point you made. So I appreciate you saying that. I think that's very important, that particular aspect of thinking about careers. Like, in other words, don't fight against something you can't really be good at. So I talk about something like, front of house, back of house. In terms of people skills and interpersonal skills, front of house, if you're good with people, there's a lot of jobs in the front of the house, so to speak. If you're not as good with people, there's a lot of jobs in back of house where you're not doing as much interacting. So anyway, I thank you for answering that way. That was, I think, good advice.
Cool. Hey,
Sure.
before we get to our last couple of questions, people to watch or brands to watch. If we are looking into the African continent overall in sports, whether it's from the grassroots side to the highest level of professional, who should people be looking at following as, if you project forward a couple of years, especially now we're going into Summer of Olympics, whether they're athletes, entrepreneurs, businesses, who are the people that you think are doing all the right work at the right time?
So I would say, partially because I cover the Middle East as well, so I'm going to cover it in regions. In the Middle East, I would say There's a really interesting rally race called the Rally Jameel, and it's women. It's a rally specifically for women, and it's grown significantly in the past 3 years, and really, really caught my eye. Specifically because back in 2017, women couldn't even drive in Saudi, and so the Rally Jameel is a really, really interesting initiative that has grown significantly. So that's something that I'm paying attention to, and in the way that it will, and just motorsports in general, the way that it will grow specifically within its interest and participation amongst women. There is a guy that's been tracking also the sports industry, Mohammed Saeed Khan, as well in the Middle East as well, that I really turn to be kind of the bucket of knowledge. So I think that he in the Middle East is really incredible. And then across the African continent, gosh, there's really so many. There's the African Business of Sports podcast in particular. There's these two gentlemen, Jabu and Edom, who do a really good job, and they've been so consistent. They've provided over 100 podcasts now for the past couple of years. And they're really, really on it in terms of the way that they cover stories, the people that they bring in. So I really enjoy their content. Across the African continent too, I would say, who else do I want to talk? Cynthia Mumbo. So Cynthia Mumbo is also, she runs her own consulting firm. She's based out of Nairobi, but she just has the pulse of the African continent from a sports perspective. She's been, really one of the ones that's been leading the work. And herself, as well as another gentleman, Brian Wasala, he runs an organization called the Football Foundation for Africa. And he runs, a business of football conference every year. And so he's another one that specifically football focused, but is also just really killing it in terms of wanting to grow the game. So I would say in general, those are, yes.
No, good. Okay. That's a good answer. The other question I had before we get to our last ones is we just saw Aramco make a massive investment in sports, and it's going to continue to grow. Are there brands, like if someone said, here are two or three brands that are going to invest not just in African sport, but you should see or keep your eye on for even in North America or Europe? Any brands kind of come to mind as on that level?
Brands on that level, not immediately. Yeah, not immediately, but we are seeing, large investment firms consider investing and actually investing. You're seeing some sovereign wealth funds now, African sovereign wealth funds that are now investing in infrastructure. But also what I think is most important, and what I keep trying to push as much as I possibly can, is that they invest in team ownership outside of Africa as well, and participating in team ownership. So, and you're seeing, team owners in general also invest, at least ultra high net worth individuals starting to also individually invest in team ownership in a way that they never did before, which is really encouraging in and out of the African continent. So that's a significant change that we've seen. But I think that there's such a large fintech community and population in the US, and I would love to see more of them participating. I think Paystack in particular is a company that has started to really contribute, just really contribute to the sports industry. But I think we'll see many more over the next several years.
Joe, one last question about sports in Africa. Sandrine, what sports are trending up in terms of participation, and what sports are trending up in terms of interest and viewership?
After viewership has always been big for football, but AFCON this year was just unbelievable in terms of not only its viewership, but also even just the returns. There was a story that just came out that they made $80 million in profit, which is the most they've ever made. But the viewership from that was absolutely insane this year, which was amazing. I would say on a smaller note, paddle. In terms of participation, I think we're definitely seeing the paddle and pickleball craze, and Africa is not left out of that by any means necessary. So there's been a lot of paddle courts, a lot of pickleball courts that have gone up. Participation has definitely got up in that respect as well. Interest, very similar to the global trend in motorsports as well, and in F1 in particular. So I think a lot of people would be very interested in what an F1 in Africa looks like. F1 race, excuse me. But I would say, and then, rugby has always been, at least in pockets in South Africa, in Southern Africa in general, in Kenya, have always been of interest, but it's growing. It's growing now, which is good.
But did the development of the African League with the help of the NBA have a direct impact over the last few years in terms of participation and viewership? I mean, is there any evidence to say when after this league started, there are specific things that have increased or improved as a result of the league being there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that certainly viewership, but also participation, namely because NBA Africa as a whole, but also other entities like Giants of Africa have done a really good job of like building basketball courts, which is ultimately the hindrance in participation. And so Giants of Africa has a goal. I believe it's to build 100 courts in the next 10 years. Or it has to be shorter than that. Don't quote me on this, but I believe it's at least 100 courts. But we're seeing more and more people who see and understand the value of just actually just having a playing field. And so that in and of itself, I think, has been a significant change. And by, Rwanda's real enthusiasm behind hosting the Basketball Africa League and building even the Kigali Arena for the Basketball Africa League has specifically encouraged other markets to also look at sports in general. How do they participate and partner with not only just the NBA, but how do they grow the game of basketball as well? So, yeah, it's been some directly and some indirectly. Some competition between governments has also been healthy for the growth of basketball, too.
Cool. You answered one of our final three questions, which was the advice. But you're trying to cover such a massive audience. How do you stay up to date? Like, where do you get your information from? What are reliable sources? You mentioned the Africa Business of Sports podcast, which we can now definitely check out. Number one. And so that's number two. The third question, even though you are right now in Montreal, not your home, but on the road. When you go home, like, what are some of the cool things on your shelf? Like the little mementos that you picked up along the way. So those are the two questions.
So, some places that honestly, Google. Honestly, Google Alerts is my best friend at this point. But also just hearing, some stories through the network. So I've been fortunate that I've so connected with just industry leaders. And a lot of this information also just gets posted on LinkedIn by the person who's actually doing it. And it's not even necessarily in a formal publication. And so some stories also come through that as well, which I also really like because I think it's important to spotlight, those stories as well and to see what's happening. But some publications that are much more enthusiastic, I think, about carrying sports, specifically African sports business stories. I think Al Jazeera has really increased and ramped up their content. Semafor Africa has also ramped up their content around sports business, which is great to see. And so little by little, Bloomberg even as well has as well. So it's interesting to see some of these larger publications recognize the value in that. And then in terms of some trinkets, honestly, I'm really a clothes person. So it's not necessarily anything on my shelf, it's things in my closet. And so
So what's
I
what is
try to
tell some of the cool swag that would be cool to hear about. So
I mean, honestly, there's a playbook fashion or merch line in my head that certainly exists, and hopefully I'll be able to make it come to fruition. But yes, I'm a big fashion person, and so I definitely look to collect clothing from the places that I go to as much as I possibly can. So that's what I
great.
bring home. That and food.
Good. Food and clothes. Where can people find more information about you and Playbook?
Yeah, so our website is www.weareplaybook.co. I'm also launching an Instagram. I'll also be launching an Instagram that's at the same handle, weareplaybook.co. We are also on LinkedIn. That's predominantly where the community exists right now through my personal platform, Sandrine, last name NZEUKOU. And then we have a company page as well. But the happenings really are really on my personal LinkedIn. I've been reading so much about kind of creator founders. And so for anyone else, an additional piece of advice for anyone that's building something, people want to connect with the human. They could care less about the company page. So
Good
as
point.
much as you can, share the information, share the content you want to share through your page. You'll get so much more engagement, and so much more reach.
Cool. Great little tidbits. And I don't know, Tom, I think maybe Antarctica is like the last continent we haven't covered on our podcast in 7 years now that we've covered off with
We'll work
Sandrine.
our way around the globe, Joe.
Yeah,
We'll
yeah.
just
So,
another 8 years,
yes.
maybe we'll cover them all.
Yeah.
Yes.
Cool. You want to wrap us up?
Yeah, thanks, Sandrine. We really appreciate the time you spent with us today and the story and all the positivity that you exude. It's a great thing. And it sounds like, as someone who's been around the media business a long time and has done a little entrepreneurial stuff, like you got a huge opportunity with this playbook idea, I think, based on a lot of the stuff we talked about today. But there's just seemingly this kind of unlimited potential almost. And the fact that you're so, I think you're seeding it the right way, like that advice about the personal devotion to LinkedIn to start building the community, start getting a little bit of buzz, then you add the newsletters and the events and stuff like that. That seems like the only way to do a modern media company as opposed to some of the duds that we've seen the last few years in the US, where investors have put in, $100 million and they're out of business in less than 12 months because they think that's the way you build a media company is just to put money into it. And I think we've all learned that's not the case any longer. So good for you for doing that. And it sounds like there's a ton of potential. We appreciate everybody listening. Behind the scenes is Mike Schroeder, as always, producing. We appreciate Mike's work. If you have any thoughts on other topics or guests that might be interested in talking to us, and vice versa, we're all ears. You can reach out to me or Joe on LinkedIn, or you can use our representative, Sandrine, since she's so good on LinkedIn. But thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you all in the next episode.